The time has come, ladies and gentlemen.
InvestFest, that's right.
That's right. InvestFest 2023 is here.
August 25th, 26th, and 27th in Atlanta, Georgia. We are taking it to a new level. Bigger than ever. This year, we're going to do 20,000 people in Atlanta, Georgia.
I want you to do yourself a favor. Head over to investfest.com right now.
We will have activations from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. 3 days, musical performances, billionaires. Everything is going to be a completely life-changing experience. Vendor Marketplace, Food Truck Village, you know how we do.
Don't wait, don't hesitate. Head over now.
Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining. And in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances. It's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for, intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's monarchmoney.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Earners, what's up? Look, quick question. How is your social battery doing right now? I'll be honest, mine is a bit on the low side. Maybe it's not setting enough boundaries or just a typical slowdown after our super hectic work schedule. It's so easy to overlook our social needs or overextend ourselves, isn't it? What's your ideal balance of socializing? And how do you recharge? Whether you find energy in crowds or need more time to yourself, understanding your social needs is crucial. I remember a time when I struggled to balance my social engagement with my personal downtime. Y'all know us, we're always outside. So what really helped me was learning to recognize my limits and prioritizing my well-being. I've heard plenty of my peers champion therapy as a great tool for gaining this kind of insight. It's not just for big life issues. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life by equipping you with the skills to manage your social energy effectively. So if you're considering therapy, why not check out BetterHelp? It's an entirely online service, making it incredibly convenient and adaptable to your lifestyle. Just start with a quick questionnaire and you'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And if you feel the need to switch therapists for any reason, you can do so at any time without any extra cost. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/earnyourleisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp. HELP.com/earnyourleisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
Now I don't want to just do stuff because I can. I want to do it when I know I could do a good job. You know, this saying, jack of all trades, master of none, is still better than being a master of one. I don't want to do so many things that my music or my acting or the sports starts to diminish because I'm just spinning too many plates.
A jack of all trades, a master of none is better. I've never heard anybody say that before.
I've never heard the second part.
The second part. You know, people forget the second part. They always say you don't want to be a jack of all trades and a master of none, but it's still better than being a master of one.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, bag drop. F*** a mic drop, bag drop.
Yes, we are back.
Yes.
LA, this is going to be a legendary episode. We got one of the GOATs in culture, Ice Cube. So much to talk about. But before we start, I give a big shout out to my brother, Baron Davis, and the whole Slick team. This is his studio in Los Angeles, and he was gracious enough to let us use his facility. So shout out to BD and shout out to WTF Media.
Yep.
For making the magic happen. But without further ado, this is somebody who is an icon in the game, somebody who really needs no introduction. You know, when you talk about music, when you talk about film, TV, and now sports, somebody has dominated over the course of 30 years and revolutionized every single thing that I just described.
Mm-hmm.
O'Shea Jackson.
Yeah.
So, the legendary.
Some may call this a true West Side connection.
Legend in so many different games, but has really, you know, become a superstar entrepreneur and spearheaded the Big Three.
Yeah.
Which is, I believe, the only, correct me if I'm wrong, the only Black-owned professional sports league in America?
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Something that has just taken the whole world by storm and, you know, about to actually kick off a new season in a couple of weeks. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about the music, entrepreneurship, everything. So first and foremost, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man. You know, this is a nice West Side connection.
It's only right.
The only way.
So, all right, let's get into this. So the Big Three, let's go through it. First, let's start the origin. I know it starts in 2017. And anybody in any neighborhood has played 3-on-3 basketball.
Without
1-on-1 basketball, 2-on-2, and 3-on-3. So it's something that was already familiar to us. But what made you have the idea to actually take it from the playground to an arena?
Well, you know, we rewind about 2 years back to 2015 is when I started to really look at the 3-on-3 game. I had saw so many tournaments like Weekend Warrior, put your squad together, come out and play for, you know, Sprite or Mountain Dew or Nike or whatever. But it was all amateur, outside, you know, nothing professional. Then I started looking at 3-on-3, not just me, but my partner, Jeff Quinnes. We started looking at 3-on-3 all over the world. And to be honest, 3-on-3 is played more than 5-on-5 when you take about, you know, you take every basketball bouncing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are 3-on-3 over 5-on-5. And around the world, it's because of infrastructure. You know, they didn't have, you know, 50, 60 years of basketball. Now we got 75. But so they play a lot of 3-on-3. I realize a lot of kids play 3-on-3. We all play more 3-on-3 than 5-on-5, you know, in our lifetime. So it all, you know, it just was right. And there was like a void in the market in a lot of ways. And, you know, if you like me, after the NBA finals, you kind of hibernate till football start. So I'm like, yo, this is a nice gap in the summer where it's like nothing that's really popping. No full season happens from June to September, but the Big Three. You know, everything else is mid-season or preseason. So we just felt like this was the perfect sport at the perfect time. And it's already kind of in our It's in our DNA to understand 3-on-3.
So after you have the idea, you have to create a business structure around it. So what's that like? Because when we think 3-on-3, we're thinking like people playing in the parks. You're not playing in the parks. You're playing in actual NBA arenas. So how is that building the structure around it, getting players to commit to it, getting coaches, getting sponsors? What was that like in the beginning?
You know, working and arguing about rules, working about business model, you know, just kind of working it all out, arguing about that stuff. You know what I'm saying? Really trying to figure out the best way to introduce this league and what is this league about. And we felt like the mini all-star game was the hook. We're going to go from city to city, going to take the whole league. You can see the whole league if you go to a game. Mm-hmm. And we're going to bring in, you know, over 100 athletes that, you know, probably 75% of them, you know, you've seen them somewhere or you're actually a fan. So that was the business model, and we were going to treat our players better. We were going to give our captains control on who he plays with, mm-hmm. you know, not have a GM, and just really make it a players' league. And be outside the box, you know, come with our own rules that made our game more interesting than, if you look at FIBA 3-on-3, it feels pretty amateurish, you know, mm-hmm. it feels like outside pickup game stuff, but we wanted to do things that would bring us into the arena, create the atmosphere, and create the style of game that was better to watch and better to play for the players. And so in doing that, you know, we mixed it all in a pot like gumbo, you know what I'm saying? and came out with the big three. And for the last 3-4 years, we've really been tweaking it and adjusting it. So all the games are interesting. You're never out of a game. You can always come back because of the rules that we've laid down. You know, our 4-point circle is, to me, necessary and innovative and smart. Bring the fire, you know, one of our rules where you can challenge a foul. Once a half, you can challenge a foul and have the players go 1-on-1 if you didn't like the call. And if he make it, the foul count. If you stop him, then the foul comes off the board. You know, it's things like that that we can do in the 3-on-3 game that you can't quite do in the 5-on-5 game, and it makes our game unique.
So, speaking of the business model, how is it? Because like the NBA, for instance, or any sports league, is owned by the owners, right? Mm-hmm. And each team, they own their team, obviously, and they hire a commissioner. But you guys have full ownership of the league, right? It's different.
Yes.
It's like the team. There's no ownership in the teams per se.
Not yet.
Okay.
We're starting to move to that model now. You know, we're in talks with a few. One MLB owner, another former NBA owner, to buy teams. Mm. But we did start with the, you know, kind of like NASCAR or UFC or something. You know, we wanted to make sure that we could calibrate the league before we started to sell teams to owners, because we wanted the league to work and we didn't want, you know, too much interference with our adjustments. Mm. And I think we're at a point where it's time to take these teams and put them in cities with owners. But this year we're still going to go with with owning the whole league and getting another season like that under our belt before we start.
So you would prefer to have different people owning different teams?
Yeah. You know, that's the growth of the league. You know, that's us owning the league, you know, in its entirety forever was never realistic or never, you know, our plan. Our plan was to get the league, make sure it worked from all angles, and then start selling teams, then expand. So that's where we at. We're in that process right now.
Yeah, I feel like the last time, especially our generation, has seen a basketball movement travel like this, it was And1.
Yeah.
Right. So when I look at your model, I'm thinking, like, was there an influence in that? Because when we were watching that, we were rooting for And1, and then we started to find out who the players were, and then we rooted for them. And so I see something very similar here where it's, let's root for the league, and now we have teams. Obviously, we see Trilogy is dominates, and that we can find guys inside of there. Like, all right, these are the players. Was that the biggest influence and model that y'all were looking at?
One of them. I also played in the NBA has something called the Entertainment League. The NBA E-League, yeah, out here in
last week got triple-double.
Yeah. So, you know, they would gather a few of us and go play in Phoenix or go play in, you know, Oakland or whatever, you know, and it was cool because people would come out and check it out. So I was like, yo, this model is pretty cool going from city to city. Especially with something like this, because you're kind of introducing people to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, seeing a 7-footer play 3-on-3 basketball in person is a whole nother experience that I don't think you would ever forget. So we want to go from city to city. And then pretty soon, you know, these teams will land in their own cities and we'll go there most of the time.
The crazy thing about 3-on-3, because I played basketball my whole life, a lot of people don't know this, 3-on-3 is actually a different game than 5-on-5.
Definitely.
Like, remember Ed Crenshaw? We knew this kid. We knew this guy.
Shout out to Ed.
He wasn't the most athletic. He probably wasn't the best on a 5-on-5, but he's virtually unstoppable 3-on-3.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think that it's actually introducing a whole new wave. Like, even if you when you see the Olympics introduced, I want to ask your thoughts on that, but... Mm-hmm. It's not the same experience as a basketball fan. You can go to a 5-on-5 game, but if you're watching a half court 3-on-3 game, it's not the same. It's different.
Definitely not the same. Different skill sets, you know. And I'm glad you brought that up because we've had guys who come straight from the NBA and they struggled in the mm-hmm. Big Three. And then we've had guys who didn't make it to the NBA and they shine.
Mm-hmm.
In the 3-on-3 format, because it is a different game. You know, in 5-on-5, you can be a specialist. You know, you can be defensive stopper, three-point shot guy.
Run the court.
Yeah, rebound guy.
Yeah.
No, you know what I'm saying? You don't have to be able to do too much else. But
off screens.
Set the screen. But in 3-on-3, nowhere to hide. You have to be able to pass, dribble, shoot, and defend. Or you're going to get embarrassed. So you got to have all around basketball skills to be successful in 3-on-3 because it's not the help coming. It's not the screens coming. It's, you know, it's mano-a-mano pretty much. You got to man up.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on, I mean, I watched it in the Olympics this year, but as you're creating this league, it's becoming something. And I feel like overseas, we watch 3-on-3 all the time. Like, I see the highlights, it's always a 3. It's never 5-on-5 when I watch highlights from overseas. So when you see it become an Olympic sport, what are your thoughts? Do you feel like the impact is growing?
Or do you feel you're responsible for that?
Both, right?
Well, we did announce before they announced that it was an Olympic. So
he's humbly speaking.
I got to say that we sparked something, hopefully, but you never know. I think it's two different types of game. Like, you have the NBA and then you have the Olympic 5-on-5. It's two different styles.
Mm-hmm.
Same with FIBA 3-on-3 and the Big Three. You know, they have the amateur version of the game that they do very well. And we have the pro version of the game. We actually had a few Olympians come and play in the league.
Mm.
They play for the aliens. And so we just feel like it's two different experiences, although, you know, that doesn't hurt what we're doing at all because it just puts more attention that 3-on-3 basketball is worth your time and, you know, your effort and your money to pay attention and love the sport. You know?
So let's talk about overseas expansion. that's something that all major sports leagues have done. NFL, I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are playing two games in London this year. Mm-hmm. And they've had NBA games in France and, they, of course, London. There's NBA Africa. So you, for the first time, Big Three, is going to be at the O2 Arena Championship and All-Star Game, right? That's major. Yes. So obviously you're doing that intentionally, right? So what's the plans for overseas growth and how does that fit into the business model?
You know, we've always had our vision overseas, not only Europe, but Asia. And, you know, to me, it's part of growing a league. You want to be worldwide. And, you know, basketball, boxing or UFC, you know, MMA and soccer are the three things that translate all over the world. Mm-hmm. And so we had a game in Toronto in 2019, I believe, or 18. We did our championship in the Bahamas in 2021. And so going to London is, you know, a great statement for the league. You know, we're not only taking our championship game over there, but like you said, our all-star game. So you'll be able to see the best that the Big Three has to offer, you know, in London. And, you know, we have a vision of making what's called the Big Cup and have each country submit a team and see who got the best 3-on-3 players in the world. We also wouldn't mind if an owner bought a team and put it in London. You know, by us playing once a week, we have time for the travel. You know, it's we can play anywhere in the world. So that's another advantage of the league.
Yeah, that makes a true world champion, right, when you do that.
Without a doubt.
Another way to help the league grow is having exposure. Mm-hmm. And for a while, when the league started, you could watch it on CBS. I know now there's a structure with Paramount Plus. What was that conversation like getting it to the networks and trying to convince them that this is something that is worth picking up and how it's going to scale going forward?
It was a big part of the league. You know, we understand, you know, we could have, you know, went straight to a streamer and got a check and did it like that. But to be able to put it on a major network, for the first 2 years we were on Fox. Mm-hmm. First it was on FS1. And then we got some of the games on Big Fox. But we've been with CBS for 3 years. It's our fourth year. And, you know, half the games are on CBS, which is great. You know, it's great. We're growing the league. Our ratings are better than NHL, MLS. You know, they have more games, but, you know, we have a constant amount of people watching, you know, which is damn good for a league that's only been around 6 years. So, you know, we're trending in the right direction. We're back on CBS this year and Paramount Plus.
The inspiration from others drives us forward. Their resilience pushes us to excel, and their path navigates the way towards freedom. Ford is proud to celebrate Black history, not just this month, but year-round. They're committed to being the fuel for change, supporting Ford Fund programs centered around economic, educational, and empowerment opportunities for our communities to continue creating the future. Learn more at FordFund.org. Built Ford proud.
We are working out our second platform. So half the games will be on CBS. Half the games will be on the second platform. And to me, that's the best way to grow the league is to stay on network television.
So you said somewhere that you had higher ratings than like NASCAR?
No, MLS and NHL.
Okay.
Yeah.
So correct me if I'm wrong. As a sports league, you make money off of being on television, mm-hmm. ticket sales, obviously, to the games, and then merchandise, variety of other stuff, right?
That's sponsorships.
Sponsorships.
Yep.
Corporate sponsorships.
Yep.
Those are the four big things.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, how has that gone from you? How has that gone for you so far as to work with corporate brands, to scale up and you got good ratings to, you know, work out different deals? Is it like doing one off with these TV situations, or is it like 3-year deals or 10-year deals and like kind of projecting it in the future?
Well, you know, our deal with CBS was a 2-year deal, and they re-upped it. So with brands, it varies. You know, some are 3-year. You know, our first deal with Adidas was a 5-year deal. It just varies. And, you know, the craziest thing was to have this league during the pandemic because, you know, everything, you know, kind of went back to square one till we kind of built it back up, because all brands were, they was just calibrating and redoing their business models on how they approach advertising. Some brands realized during the pandemic they didn't have to advertise a lot because they were still selling out of their products. So, you know, we had to live through that, adjust through that. And, you know, what's great is we're getting more and more corporate sponsors, you know, every year. We got more this year than we had last year, and we still haven't started the season. So we're hoping more come in. But that's, to me, you know, the constant fight when you have a league. You know, brands will come in and go out. You know? So, you know, the thing is to be around long enough to get those 5- and 10-year deals is the key.
Yeah, talk about, you know, leveraging your celebrity. Because I remember when the league first started, we were watching the games, but there was a marketing campaign behind it. You didn't know who you were going to see sitting front row.
Yeah.
And so how did you manage to approach people like, hey, this is something you got to see? Because I'm watching the games. Oh, wait, is that so-and-so sitting front row?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we wanted to, you know, we come from entertainment. So we knew the games have to be, you know, dead serious, but everything else we can have fun with, and we can encourage all our friends, people we know. We can encourage this to be the place to be in the city. You know, when we come to town, you know, it's really a cool experience. It's different than the NBA, because when you come to a Big Three game, it's not just the corporate guys hanging out. You know, you got whole families there. You know, you got people bringing their kids and the neighbors' kids. You know what I'm saying? So it's that fun atmosphere. Nobody gonna tackle you if you run down and get an autograph from Dr. J. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's like that on purpose. You know, I wanted it to be fun and different than just your typical NBA game, which is pretty standard, you know.
So about Web3, I know you guys have a Web3 project, Forever Experience Action Token, I
believe. Yeah.
So what's the deal with that?
Well, you know, when NFTs came out, a lot of people didn't understand what they were. A lot of people, you know, was like, yo, why would you sell digital art? Who was buying that? And so the next step in NFTs was utilities, like being able to buy this NFT and have physical and real things that you can do with it and not just be a piece of art. And so what we came up with was a feat, which is giving people a ownership like experience. Like if you was the owner, you would have special parking, you'd have, you know, VIP treatment, you know, you would have access to practices and, you know, the players and the functions and the parties and the things that we do. And so that's what we offered. You know, we offered our NFTs, but they were real things that you can do. You know, you can, you know, own a piece of a team and be treated like an owner.
When I look at the league, I look at the player retention. And so it makes me wonder, how were the contracts structured with the players? Is it season by season or is it multi-year? Because, I mean, I've seen James White play almost every year.
Yeah.
You had ISO Joe killing, and I mean, he's probably going to be in the Big Three Hall of Fame.
Without a doubt.
So how does that work with the players? How do you structure contracts with them?
Usually sign 1- or 2-year contracts. You know, it's dependent on success. You know, if you winning, that's my phone, sorry. But if you winning, you know, we want you back. If you're not winning, then we may make a move here and there. You know, it's really about, and how long you've been with your squad and your team. You know what I'm saying? Like that, that's, you know, if you've been there a while and y'all ain't really got over the hump, we may make a change. And what happens is we pick the player captain, and he gets to pick who he wants to play with. So the co-captains are his choice. Mm. And then they draft two players from the combine to make up the rest of the roster. And so, you know, we have certain rules, though, too, that if you win a championship, that same squad has to return to defend. Mm. And the runner-up team, they can return with the same squad, too, but they have to send one player back to the draft pool and pick a new player. And then everybody else, the captains and co-captains stay the same, but all they draft players got to go back to the pool and get, they got to, you know, re-up. You know, if you're not winning, you got to re-up. So that's pretty much how it goes. So James White, they've, you know, won or gotten to the playoffs or the championship. And so, you know, he's there, you know what I'm saying? There's no reason to pull him because they've been winning the championship, you know.
Shout out to Steven Jackson.
Yeah, for sure.
That's my guy. But there's been a lot of talk lately about player conduct from the NBA side, right? And I want to talk about this Ja Morant situation because I see a lot of people like, well, he has a right to bear arms, but then it's like, well, he works for a private organization. So have you ever had any issues with your league as far as player conduct? And what's your personal thoughts on specifically the Ja Morant situation?
Yeah, I mean, we want players to conduct themselves in a professional manner. What's cool, we're dealing with players that's
older,
you know, been around the game a little bit. You know, we're not dealing with kids. You know, we're 22 and up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we want people to conduct themselves in the right way. We're not going to micromanage our players, though. You know, at a certain point, you know, what they do outside of the league is pretty much their business. But the NBA is a different, you know, it's a different league. They got different standards. You know, I just want him to be treated like other players that's brandish guns on, you know, on pitchers or whatever. You know, so it's complicated. You know, it's like marijuana. You know, mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like, you're in a state that is legal for recreational use. Do you suspend a guy on camera smoking a blunt? You know, it's real tricky. So, you know, I just think you just take everything into consideration. It doesn't help his brand. And I think he should consider that, you know, that little 5 minutes of being cool with your homies, it don't do nothing for you. Mm. It don't do nothing for you, you know, so probably should put the guns down. You probably don't want to need a gun. You know, in this life, you don't want to need a gun. So I'm saying, so, you know, playing with it is ridiculous. You shouldn't play with guns, period.
You brought up marijuana, and so it made me think of being a league of first, because you were the first league to accept marijuana and CBD.
Yes.
As it's something that you can use inside of the league. You also are the first with a 4-point play.
Yep.
You also and first embrace, to hire a female coach.
Yep.
To lead a team.
We the first to embrace mental health.
First to embrace mental health. So being in a league of first, you're setting trends, and I'm wondering what the relationship is like with the other league, right? You brought up the NBA. So is there a positive relationship there where they're watching what you guys are doing and saying, like, maybe these are some of the things that we can now accept? Do you feel like you're setting those trends in that way?
I mean, I think they're taking things that we're doing and watching us, and we're, you know, somewhat guinea pig for it. But, you know, we've taken some things from the NBA, too. So we understand that. I don't think they like the fact that we changed the game without asking. We do what's best for the big three. And they might not dig that because they have a business model. You know, their players watch what we do. And, you know, they may want to be the only ones to change the game. But it's too late.
So I have a theory that virtual reality is going to change sports.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like it just makes complete sense. Like, if you could pay to actually put a headset on and, like, be front row with Javonte Davis throwing punches or LeBron or whatever, right? Like, I feel like virtual reality is going to be big, period. But I feel like sports, particularly basketball, football, and boxing. So how do you feel about that? And is that something that you would incorporate in your league as far as to have, like, and not right now, but in the future, a virtual reality component where people can actually pay and have a virtual reality experience from home?
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, however they want to experience the big three. You know, it's a challenge to get 10, 12,000 people in an arena and you're free on TV. So, you know, some people going to want to watch it at home. Like me, I prefer watching boxing at home. You know, I've been to a couple of matches and shit, if you blink.
So,
and you know, I like the announcers. I like the angles. I like the replays. I like all that. So, you know, that doesn't make me, you know, less of a boxing fan. So people are going to have own preference and, you know, we would be crazy to try to shun the technology that's available, for people to experience the big three. Cause it's all about eyeballs now. You know, it's all about as many people seeing the game, you know, loving the game and staying interested in the game. That's the most important thing right now, you know, making money off tickets, getting a big contract for streaming and all these, to me, is not the way to blow up the league. The way to blow up the league is eyeballs. And so we'll do whatever it takes to get those eyeballs on us, you know, whether you come or watch on TV or virtually.
Yeah. Well, one of the things when you're creating something innovative, and this is something we've learned, is you got to document the process.
Yeah.
Document it all. And so I know you're working with Jesse Collins Entertainment, who is phenomenal in covering, especially us.
Yeah.
Covering us in the right manner. So talk about that, and because I know a lot of it is built around some of the challenges that it took you to get to this point with the league.
Without a doubt, man. You know, people wouldn't understand how hard it's been these last 7 years because of the obstacles. And not only obstacles from the outside, but obstacles within. You know, dealing with you know, people who have ulterior motives for the league, you know, and so, you know, it's been a challenge, but, you know, we up for it. You know, we kind of knew it wasn't going to be a cakewalk, that, you know, starting a league from scratch is virtually impossible, because so many things got to go right. And you can get attention, but keeping it here is another animal. So, it's been a challenge, but I think people dig it. I know the players love it. I know fans love it. And to me, I wouldn't want to do anything else right now. You know, another movie, another record. Like, you know, I could do that, but this right here is something that's huge and humongous. And so this is where I want to be.
So I want to ask you about Hollywood, actually, because you start in music and become a superstar, and then you just go on a crazy run in Hollywood. But so director, producer, screenwriter, and actor, you actually have done all of the four, I believe one movie you did all four as Players Club, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you first start in Hollywood, Boys in the Hood is your first movie?
Yeah, classic.
That's classic.
Classic.
Yeah. So, hey, I got, all right, let's start there. When you're doing Boys in the Hood, do you in your mind know, like, this is something that is going to be a game changer?
No. Nah. You know, as a matter of fact, when I first saw the rough cut, it, you know, never show somebody a rough cut if they don't know the process. Because I was pissed off. You know, I left, called my manager at the time, and I was like, we fucked up. We fucked up doing this movie. It don't even look like a movie. It's all, it feel flat. And she was like, what you talking about? I said, John, show me a piece of it. Well, he showed me the movie, but it's unfinished. It don't look finished. She said, did he say it was finished? I said, no. Let's let him finish the movie. Let him finish the movie. So from the time I had seen the rough cut to the time he showed me the finished movie, I was pissed off. You know, I was thinking, man.
What didn't you like about it?
Well, you know, it just didn't have all the sound effects in it. Mm. It didn't have, you know, if you watch a movie without them sound effects and things, it feel flat.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, somebody set a cup down, you don't hear the fucking cup. You know, you like, you see a car go by, you don't hear the car. You know what I mean? It just seemed like, what the hell, why is this movie missing sounds? You know, I know I see, I should be hearing. But he had to put all that in. And he had to edit it and polish it up. And so when I seen it finished, then I knew, I was like, this is some shit. You know, this is a good ass movie. Like, this is something that is gonna change people's outlook on guys that come from our neighborhood, you know.
Yeah. Did you feel, that's interesting, because now I'm thinking about it, at the time, this is after America's Most Wanted, this is after, or right around the same time as Death Certificate. Are you thinking this is a risk? Because I'm Ice Cube, the rap star who's from NWA, who has his solo career that's thriving, and here I am trying to act. Because at the time, we don't really see too many people in rap that's acting. It's you and you.
Kid and Play,
House Party.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was a risk. Ice-T was acting a little bit.
Oh, he's in Colors. Yep.
Yeah. But he's in Breaking. He's in Breaking and shit. But it was, I was like, man, you know, I want to do good. I'm not an actor. Like, I kept telling John, I'm not an actor, man. You know, like, I don't even want to be an actor. You know what I'm saying? I just want to do good in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so taking that attitude and taking that approach, and he helped me through it. Lawrence Fishburne helped me through it. Cuba Gooding Jr. You know, they all, you know, helped me get comfortable with doing that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can feel stupid acting. You know what I mean? Like, you got all these people looking and you just got to do some shit that's written down from a piece of paper and not from your true heart, you know? So it was an adjustment.
Yeah. I'm thinking to myself now, you start Boys in the Hood, John Singleton, rest in peace, the influence there, but you come back with Higher Learning with him again. So talk about the role he played inside of you, thinking about screenwriting, producing, directing.
Everything. You know, he discovered me as an actor. He coached me as a writer, and he helped me as a director. Like, he actually came to the set when I was shooting Players Club and helped me. This big scene, I was running out of time, and he just helped me organize it and get it shot. And so he just stopped by to see what was up. You know, he didn't stop by to work, and he stayed there with me for 6 to 8 hours to make sure it just got done right. And so I really needed him that day. And I appreciated him helping me. Because, you know, he went to film school. He went to, to these things to prepare him. You know, I didn't do nothing but shoot videos and I was on a few movie sets. So he was my mentor throughout, you know, I wouldn't have done film and produced and done these things without John, you know, basically being a living example and then helping me when I needed it.
So how do you even have, because most people, you become a successful actor. A lot of people just stay in that pocket and you could have just been a successful actor. But like I said, to go screenwriter, producer, and director, I think the first thing that you wrote was Friday? Was that?
No, that's the third movie I wrote. He encouraged me to write. He asked me, you know, I was sitting in his house one day and he was like, yo, when you gonna write a movie? And I'm like, what? I said, man, I'm barely getting this acting shit right. He said, you expect every script you get to be as good as Boys in the Hood? That's what he said. I'm like, I don't know. He said, not me. He said, Hollywood is full of trash. He said, if you want to do good movies, you should write them. So, and then he said, yo, if you can write a record, like the records you write, you can write a movie. So that kind of gave me the encouragement to just start writing. And then he would help me, you know, I would take him my scripts. He would read them, you know, they was trash, but but he would help me get better. And I wrote a script called America Eastish Young, which is from an old Funkadelic record. And then I wrote another one called Full Life. And then I wrote Friday with DJ Pooh.
Legendary.
So Friday, you wrote that. That comes out.
Classic.
That changed the games again. So this time, you're a little bit more seasoned in Hollywood, and you actually wrote it. So when you wrote Friday, did you have an idea that was going to be as big as it turned out to be?
For the cool people, you know, I felt like we're going to do a hood movie, and if you're not from the hood, you might not understand what's going on, but that's cool. Long as people from the hood know what's going on, because I felt like everybody I liked in Hollywood that was black.
Earners, what's going on? Listen, EYLU is relaunching, revamping, retooling. That's right, we're creating a new educational experience that's more expansive. Shotty, tell them what we got.
Yes, 2023. We got a lot in store, a lot planned for you guys.
So you know that EYLU already includes monthly financial planning calls with me, book club calls with Troy, real estate calls with MG the Mortgage Guy, access to the Home Buying Blueprint Volume 1 and Volume 2. Part of the revamp will include 27 local chapters from across the United States, live interactive teaching, hands-on, not just pre-recorded videos, plus 15 brand new curriculums.
The biggest just got bigger.
Head over to EYLUniversity.com. That's EYLUniversity.com. See you there.
I had hood classics. And I wanted mine. You know, I mean, I had Boys in the Hood, but I wanted my own. So I was, you know, working on that because I was like, if we get a hood classic, then people are always gonna like this movie and they always gonna hire me as an actor if I ever have to, you know, rely on my past to get work in the future. So having a hood classic was most important.
I think Cube, you might be, and sorry, maybe you can correct me. You might be the only person with a classic 5-mic album and a classic movie. That's his. What you think? Definitely?
Ever?
Yeah.
A classic movie that he made?
That he made.
He made the movie.
Yeah. And a classic album. Like, when 5 mics meant something, you have 5 mics. That's a fact. And Friday, Boys in the Hood alone was a classic.
Yeah.
That's yours. But Friday is yours. That might be a new thing. How long did it take to shoot? Because it was like maybe a couple.
20 days.
20 days to shoot.
Yeah.
So as you're writing is one thing, right? But this business side of it, and we've seen it with production, is you got to pay these people.
Yeah.
Right. Who's teaching you about budgets, like who you need, the lighting, the direct, who's teaching you about that? Is it John as well?
I had a great manager by the name of Pat Charbonnet. And she's actually a producer on the Friday movie. But between her and me, we was just figuring it out, you know, figuring out who we wanted to use to help us here and there. And so we just, you know, worked on finding the right crew, you know. But yeah, it was really, you know, her knowledge of the business that helped us get that movie done in 20 days.
So what? Can I do a follow up really quickly? Because you alluded to it, Players Club.
Yeah.
Right. Out of 40 films, it's the only one that you have directing, producing, screenwriter, and acted in.
Yeah. And did the soundtrack.
I'm wondering because why is that the only one that you did it? Was it something that you saw from the production side that was like, or directing side that was like, this is a lot?
Well, directing kind of takes you out of the game for about a year and a half. You're stuck on one project, you know, and I didn't want to be bogged down. So I actually like producing better than directing. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to find a director that I can work with and then produce the movie because I'm not as bogged down. You know, I can actually produce, three movies in the same time as I could direct one. And so I just felt like I don't want to be bogged down like that again to have to, you know, I wrote the movie. So I was on that movie forever, like writing it, then getting it where somebody wanted to make it, then casting it, shooting it, editing, doing the soundtrack, you know, putting it out and commentating the DVD. And, you know, so since you look up and it's a long time on one thing instead of doing multiple.
So speaking of the Friday, was there lessons that you learned? Because correct me if I'm wrong. Was there issues with Warner Brothers? Because they own the franchise, right?
Warner Brothers, they distribute the franchise. Okay. So they distributed the first one. And it has in the contract that they have the right to distribute each one after.
Each one after. So what were there issues trying to make more Fridays? Like they have to approve something before you can actually make a Friday?
Yeah.
So talk about that.
Well, we did the first one and I wasn't going to do another one after that. They approached me. Could you think of another one? So I said, yeah. And then I approached Chris Tucker. He didn't want to do it. So I was like, oh, okay. This kind of throw a little monkey wrench in the movie. So we did it next Friday with Mike Epps. That was great. People loved it. Then we did Friday at the next. And then they asked me to write a fourth one. And I wrote and they had an issue because, Craig and Day Day ends up in jail from selling weed, you know, and finally end up in jail. And Debo and the Joker Brothers is trying to, you know what I mean? They in jail too. So they trying to stab them up and shit. So they just was like, jail's not funny. You know, nobody's going to laugh about being in jail. And I'm like, you're ridiculous. Like, then all these movies come out like, Orange is the New Black and Let's Go to Jail and
Life
and, you know, Get Hard and all this shit. And I'm like, okay, so y'all definitely don't know what y'all talking about. So I just kind of, you know, that was in 2013, you know, so I just kind of stopped paying attention to them. Then they asked again, they begged again for me to write another one. So I said, okay, I'm going to write one to fit this time. Won't be about jail. And they loved it, but they just had these little notes that they kept
trying to change things.
Trying to change it. And I'm like, dude, you guys do not know what needs to go on a Friday movie. Like, stop pretending like you guys are smart when it comes to this shit. You know what I mean? I know it. Mm-hmm. I know it's going to work. I know it's not going to work. And they just kept messing around, knowing notes, back and forth, you know, 6 months of this shit. And then John Witherspoon passed away. Mm. So they like just fucked around till the man passed away. And then Tiny passes away. Yep. AJ Johnson. It's like the movie, we're going to go back on the block. And so, you know, I've been trying to get control of the franchise since then.
So you actually wrote two more Fridays.
Yeah.
And that's never came out.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So you say you're trying to get control of the franchise. How do you go about trying to get control of the franchise?
You know, I mean, of course, appealing to their superiors on, you know, they're basically sleeping on money.
Is it like a buyout thing? Maybe like if you pay, you can.
I'm not going to pay for it.
I'm
not going to pay. You know, what they need to do is let me control it and they'll make a lot of money, but they're not going to make it from me.
So you're open to doing another one?
I'm open to seeing if another one can be done.
Yeah. While you're doing that, while that's happening, there's still other franchises being created that you're involved in.
Yeah.
Right. So Barbershop.
Yeah.
Is right there. Do you have the Are We There Yet?
Yep.
And so now you're like entrenched in family households. I wonder what that experience was like for you from Boys in the Hood to that point. Like, there's a generation where it's like, oh, Ice Cube, the guy who makes the kid movies. Like, I grew up, Ice Cube was the dude that was telling us that the police, and I was like, yeah, I'm with this. So, how's that transition? Because we don't see people grow, right? We don't see our artists grow. We don't see them evolve, and we don't see them have these moments. So what was that transition like for you?
It's amazing, you know, to be able to sustain love in families. And like, once I realized my fans, my core fans were having kids and their kids was in elementary and junior high.
Yeah.
I felt like, okay, it's time to do something to make sure I'm still cool in this household, that household, or whatever. You know, last thing I want you to look at your kid and be like, Ice Cube, you should look him up. He used to be cool. You know what I mean? We used to rock him.
Let me put this record on.
Yeah. So I didn't want to be that guy. You know, I wanted the kids to know who I was. So the way to do that is to do a movie that they love and that's always going to get played. Like, see, Are We There Yet? The kids grow up. They love it, but they outgrow it. But then there's always new kids coming up who their parents is like, yo, sick of you bugging me, stick you in front of a movie, put in Are We There Yet? So the love is generated.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? With each generation that watch that movie, they end up growing up and then they reach a point where they discover my music. They discover my other movies and stuff. So it's a way to rejuvenate fans and to make sure that the youngsters know who you are and they're not just relying on, you should have heard death certificate. You know what I mean?
You should have heard today was a good day.
Yeah.
You've done something very unique inside of that too, and that's providing opportunities. So that's the first time we see Eve in a movie.
Yeah.
The first time we see Nicki Minaj in that type of role. You were super intentional about that, like giving opportunities to people, especially in the rap world?
If they're great, you know what I mean? If they're good, if they have a personality that I think people want to see more of, you know, it's really all about being the right person for the role. And so, you know, I didn't know they was all going to work out. You know what I mean? You never know how it's going to be when they actually audition or they come on set. But yeah, I want to give people a shot that Hollywood may be overlooking.
So speaking of Hollywood, screenwriters, they're on strike right now. And this goes back to the Web3 conversation where somebody told me, and I started thinking about it, and I'm like, they might not have as much leverage this time because of ChatGPT. And it's like, well, if I can have a computer write a script in a day, then I don't necessarily need a screenwriter. True. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, you know, it's something that's very real. And it can happen. Yeah, you can have a computer write you a script in a day. But, you know, at the end of the day, will it be as real as a person writing it? Will it have that feel to it? Who knows? You know, it's a new world. That's why they on strike. You know, they want to, you know, curve it in some ways. You know, the worst thing is for them to tell the studios not to do it, but then they go home and do it. You know, when it's time for them to turn in that script.
Yeah, they're cheating.
Yeah, so, you know, at the end of the day, you know, technology is here. Everybody got to make an adjustment. I don't know if I want all my entertainment to, you know, come from an artificial source. You know, I may just check out. Mm. And, you know, people be scrolling more and looking at real stuff. You know, I think that the hunger for reality is going to start growing as more and more artificial things take over. You know, I even think it's a backlash right now with music.
Well, I was going to ask you about the music.
Because you have a lot of people using auto tunes and they sounding like a computer, and I don't know if people are gonna go for that.
Did you
hear much longer?
Did you hear the Timbaland song with Big?
Yeah, I did.
How you feel about it?
I didn't like it because it's artificial. You know, I mean, I treat it like a sample. You know, I can sample the Isley Brothers, but not the Isley Brothers. You know, it's just a piece of how great they are. You know, it's a sample. It's a portion. It's not the Isley Brothers. You know, it's my interpretation of that. So I guess you would look at this like you would look at sampling.
Yeah. In terms of the movies and writing, there was a phase when you did the family comedies, like the ones we alluded to earlier. You did the Buddy Cops films with 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street. I remember watching the original show, Holly Robinson.
Ride Along with Kevin.
Is there a genre or a topic that you feel like you're headed toward that you haven't done yet?
I think I could do more dramas. I mean, I like, with the success of my comedies, most people shove comedies in my face. Most movies I get green lit are comedy. So, you know, I got some dramas in me. So,
what's that process like of getting it green lit? So, for most people, they don't even understand. It's like you write the movie, then it's what's the next step? I have to get it to.
You write the movie, you polish it up as tight as you can get it, and you, you know, you pitch the idea to the people you know. You know, I know. From being out in Hollywood for 30 years, I know people at different studios that you could say, hey, I got something. You know, we pitching. We're going to be going around to different studios and telling them the idea on this date. You want me to come in? And so you set up a bunch of meetings where you go around town pitching the idea. And, you know, people respond to it. Yo, we like it. We want it. And then you send them the script. The script go through whatever process it go through at the studio. I think the marketing team has to sign off on it. You know, you don't want to do a movie that they can't sell. Mm-hmm. So a lot of different departments sign off on it before it's green lit. Green lit means the studio has agreed to make it. Everybody has signed off on it, and you need actual signatures. And once you get all the signatures you need, the movie, you know, they start to spend money. And the movie is actually green lit when they start to spend money.
Do you put the budget as how much it's going to cost to make it, or do they figure it out?
Yeah, you take the script, you get it to a line producer, a line producer. He breaks down how much it's going to cost, how many days it's going to take to shoot, how, you know, what you need, how many locations. And, you know, he kind of breaks the script down to puzzle pieces. And each piece costs a certain amount of money to create. Mm. So, you know, you look up and it's like, yo, for this much money, you could shoot 30 days because it costs, you know, 1/30th per day. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so, depends on how much it costs per day, that's how many days you got to shoot on how much your budget is. You know what I'm saying? So, if it costs $1 million a day and you got $30 million, you got 30 days to shoot.
So, sports and activism has always kind of gone hand in hand in the black community, from John Carlos at the Olympics to Muhammad Ali to modern day Colin Kaepernick to Kyrie Irving. You have been very vocal as an activist for a long period of time in a variety of different political situations that you've taken part in. Now you're actually an owner of a sports league. Mm-hmm. So what's your thoughts on players taking social stances, and what's your just thoughts in general on sports and political activism, racial, different things coming together? Like, what's your thoughts on that? Because a lot of people think that it should be separate. Some people think that they should go hand in hand. Like, what's your thoughts?
I think nobody want to see robots play. If that's the case, then, you know, everybody would be creating their own LeBron James robot, you know. So nobody want to see robots play. So human beings with opinions. You know, do I want you shouting out anything political in the middle of a jump shot? No. But don't shoot me. but before and after the game, man, they put a mic in your face. You got the mic. I come from a culture of you got the mic, use it. You know, and you could change somebody's attitude, you know, you could change somebody's thought process if they hear from the right person. You know, I remember different people coming up to my school and speaking, and some people I paid attention to, some people I didn't. It depends on how much that I like them, respect them, understand what they was about. So sometimes it takes an athlete to get the message across more than a politician or a teacher or preacher or whatever. So, you know, everybody should be able to voice their opinion. It don't matter if they play a sport or not.
Would there be, throughout your career, you've pretty much done a variety of different things, from speaking out against the police, political issues, acting, rapping, sports. Is there anything that you feel uncomfortable? Like, I don't want to, like, this is not my lane? Because it seems like everything is your lane. Like, is there anything where it's like, I'm staying away from this?
Yes, plenty of things. You know, I just want to do what I feel like I can be additive, you know what I mean? Be good at. I don't want to take away. And I don't want to just do stuff because I can. I want to do it when I know I could do a good job. And so I do a lot, but I make sure that I don't do too much where I can't do a good job. You know, the last thing is, this saying, jack of all trades, master of none, is still better than being a master of one. But I don't want to do so many things that my music or my acting or the sports starts to diminish because I'm just spinning too many plates.
A jack of all trades, a master of none is better. I've never heard anybody say that before.
I never heard the second part.
You know, people forget the second part. They always say, you don't want to be a jack of all trades and a master of none. but it's still better than being a master of one. So you don't want to do everything, but you don't want to just single out to just one thing too either. So I think it's about balance. It's about knowing when you've reached your limit. And I want to learn about a game and understand it before I get in it anyway. So I'm always, you know, I want to respect the game before I get in it, because if not, you're going to lose.
I want to go back to 1991. The line was, either they don't know, don't show, or don't give a fuck about what's going on in the hood.
Yeah.
More important than the line, which is very important, was the shirt that you were wearing. It said Crenshaw on it.
Mm-hmm.
That sparked a movement inside of a young man that we know now as the late Dipsy Hussle. I wonder what your thoughts were when you saw the impact that that shirt had on this community and obviously on him and the whole Marathon brand.
I didn't really make too much of it, because the shirt, you know, and Crenshaw has had a profound impact on me. You know what I mean? So it's hard to look and say, yeah, I did that. When I was affected the same way. You know, the area, it was Boulevard where, you know, people would go hang out with their cars, their women, their music. And so to be able to just even highlight that area on film was, you know, I felt honored, you know what I mean? So anybody taking that and running with it, you know, to me was an honor that I'll bestow on John instead of myself.
Did you watch Snowfall? The show?
Nah, I couldn't watch Snowfall.
Why couldn't you watch it?
Because John, you know, John wasn't there to complete the vision.
The reason I asked is because the last scene.
Yeah, I've seen that part.
I was wondering how you interpreted it, because it was kind of an ode to Boys in the Hood.
Yeah.
He's walking through the alley it reminded me of the alley that Ricky was running down.
Yeah. You want to see a dead body.
Right. You want to see a dead body. And they're filming Boys in the Hood as they're doing it.
Yeah.
So it felt like an ode to John. So I was thinking about how, you know, your thoughts on it, because you were involved in that movie. And obviously John was the creator of Snowfall.
I thought it was an amazing, they call it an Easter egg or whatever, an amazing homage and tribute to John, and we probably had some people around there screaming that, you know, what y'all making, what y'all doing.
Right.
I mean, I didn't like him yelling, "You ain't gonna win the Oscar," but you know, silly niggas yell that shit sometimes. But for the most part, I thought it was real cool. Thought it was a great way to put a cherry on top and make, you know, John's, you know, vision somewhat full circle. Cause he's always seen, you know, he saw Boys in the Hood and Poetic Justice and Baby Boy as a trilogy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this was his, you know, weekly crack at it, so to speak. So, you know, I wish he was able to, that it was his vision throughout the whole series. But that ending was real classy.
Is TV more challenging than, because you've done TV like too, is TV more challenging than a movie? Or
I think so. Because with TV you gotta basically create a movie every week. With a movie, you just, you know, it's a one-shot deal. And so I think TV is harder to keep up with that pace.
Before we leave, I just got to ask a couple of rap questions.
Yes.
Let's
do it.
It's fitting, because the last time we was here, I asked Baron Davis this same exact question.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be interested to get your take on it. Your top five rappers from L.A.
Wow. From L.A. Man, we got some cold rappers out here. I don't miss nobody, you know. I like can we claim corrupt?
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
For sure. Yes. For sure. Yes. For sure.
Yes. Man, love, I can't put them in order though.
Okay. No, that's fine. That's fine.
Man, I love corrupt.
Okay.
That's I think you wanted the coldest.
And it could be surrounding areas, Compton, Long Beach, though.
Yeah. Kendrick is cold.
Okay.
The Game is cold.
Okay.
Razzcast.
Interesting choice.
Crooked Eye.
No Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg is a superstar on all levels. Pure rhyming.
Oh, rap.
Pure rap.
Okay. Raw,
like, grab the mic.
Okay.
And kill
bars. Just bars.
Bars. You know, those to me are, you know, are the bars.
I'm going to make something even more general. It's 50 years of hip hop, right? If we're putting a playlist together, what are five songs that have to be in the 50 years of hip hop? What are some of the five greatest songs?
I will put The Breaks.
Okay.
Rapper's Delight.
Okay.
The Show.
Classic.
Damn, I'm down to two fingers left. I ain't even left the 80s yet. Wow. Man, it's hard after that. Like, wow. Man, them last two.
Can I put one in?
Go for it.
In my top 50?
Yeah.
Today is a good day. Is in the top.
Okay. All right. No problem.
I know you're going to be humbly speaking.
Yeah, I ain't going to put that one in.
Top 50 best hip hop songs.
I appreciate
that. One of those things, man.
I appreciate that.
That plays forever.
It's one of those songs.
Yeah.
It's like Summertime for Will Smith.
But it's so many. It's like, you know, Treat Her Right. Goddamn. It's like. It's so many.
It's tough. It's too many. It's too many. It's too many.
Man, it's like, yeah. It's too many to.
It's too many to
too
narrow.
Many, yeah.
Well, here might be an easier one. And I know you're obviously in a much more positive light these days, but it's important to the culture, I think, when you spar with your opponent, right? It's a core element of hip hop.
Yeah.
You have one of the top battle songs ever.
The top battle.
The top.
Okay.
The top.
What's your top five?
He said the top.
The top.
No Vaseline is the top battle song ever.
And it's not even close.
It's not even close. That?
Okay. All right, now we have to have
so, a all right, so what's the top five battle? No Vaseline is number one for you. What's the top four other than that battle songs?
I mean, I would go with, you know, Hit 'Em Up is a good one.
Hit 'Em Up.
Okay. Ether is dope.
Ether.
I would go with
Come on, Cube. You're an 80s guy. You're an 80s guy. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm just saying he's an 80s guy.
Trying to influence you.
All right, go ahead.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to go with The Bridge Is Over.
There we go.
That's what
we go.
And I don't know. I think I got to go with Let's Go.
Let's Go.
Yeah.
What was Let's Go again?
Kumo D.
No Takeover.
Takeover, honorable.
Or Back to Back.
Back to Back is dope,
back
too.
Back is serious.
Yeah.
That became like a number one record.
Yeah
it was Grammy nominated.
50 got one, too. What was that?
Back Down?
Officer Ricky.
No, Back Down.
Got a couple of things he was
Back remembering. Down. Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
Yes.
Back Down. But I don't think it's as strong as like Takeover's song. So.
Yeah. Dude, that's in the five.
But Ether. No, I would say No Vaseline and Ether. I'm surprised.
Here's why it's No Vaseline.
Okay.
You know, argue this with us.
One MC took out four MCs and the manager.
Four MCs and the manager.
Can't beat that.
Takeover. Well, no, Ether.
Ether took out a record label.
That took him out, put him on a pause.
Hyena.
They had to rearrange some things.
I broke up a group.
You did. No, yeah.
That was kind of the
template.
Beginning of the end for Rufus.
It was.
All right, so no Vaseline.
Until, I guess, like Bone Thugs, right? They came back.
Yeah, Bone Thugs was incredible.
Do you miss that element of hip hop? Like I said, I mean, of course, nobody wants to see violence and stuff like that, but do you miss the element? Because there's still people beefing each other now, but now it's real beef. Like, do you miss the element of people actually making, because it's not easy to make a song about somebody. You got to think, you got to do research. You're like, Cannabis is up there as well.
Second round now.
No, we can't forget about Cannabis. No, we can't.
Honorable mention?
That's up there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you miss that part of hip hop?
I don't know. You know, it's like fighting. You know, it's cool when somebody else is fighting. You watch, but when you're in the fight, you don't know where it's really gonna go. I don't know how cool you feel.
It's like battle.
You know, it's kind of like you putting, you know, not only yourself but your crew in some kind of, you know, possible danger. You know what I mean? You don't know how out of hand it's ever gonna get. And usually when people battling or going at it like that on the record, it's serious before they get a chance to have a conversation. Sometimes they can squash it.
You compared the making movies to making TV. You're saying like they're making a movie every week. I wonder what that's like for you, especially while you were creating these franchises. The process of writing a movie as opposed to writing an album, is it the same creative mind flow? Like what's that process or was it like for you?
No, I mean, you know, writing a movie is, you know, I looked at it kind of like a hobby. You know, it's like my downtime. I may be out of town. I may be on a movie and just bored, like in my dressing room, like in my trailer. So I'll start writing just to be creative and not just have a lot of dead space. With a record, you know, I got a beat. I'm like, you know, I want kind of instant satisfaction. With a movie, I know it's like this is a long, drawn out process. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of take a different approach. The music, you know, you want to hear something, record something, and you want it to be dope when it come out the speaker. Like, instant. You need that shit. Like, if it's not sounding good immediately, you start to, you know, either break it back down or change things or just, you know, you got to get it to that process. You got to get it sounding good immediately.
I got two more music questions for you before we finish. It's very important. Verses. Would you do a versus and who do you think is the ideal dancing partner? Because how I look at verses, it's not always like this is the best person, this is the best person. They got to kind of complement each other. Like,
yeah,
a good dancing partner. Like, I don't think 2 Chainz and Rick Ross was a good pairing, not from a skill standpoint, but it wasn't a good dancing partner. T.I. and Rick Ross is probably a better dancing partner. So how you feel about, would you do a versus, and if so, who would you want to do a versus with?
I wouldn't do a versus, but I think me and LL would be a great verses.
Why wouldn't you do a verse?
Because we both can grip and rip. You know what I'm saying? We both can grab the mic and spit it. Mm-hmm. And we both can perform our songs. So I think it'd be great. We both got hits. And, you know, he got a lot of hits. You know what I'm saying? He got a lot of hits. So I just think it'd be a good one, but I wouldn't do it.
Why not?
Because I respect him too much. I can't go against LL.
But it don't have to be a battle. It could be like, because earlier.
How is not going to be a battle?
It wasn't always Dipset and Lox turned it into the battle. But before that, it was just, because even Ghostface and Ray did a versus together. Like before the Dipset and Lox, it was more so like complimenting each other, play a song. It was very friendly. Mm-hmm. Once Jadakiss got up there and took Santana's bandana off, it hasn't been the same since.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the end of
yeah,
that type.
Yeah.
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, my last music question, how you feel about artists selling their catalogs, and would you sell your catalog?
I think, you know, you got to do what you feel is right for yourself and your family, you know, at the time. I don't think I would sell my catalog because I think it's, Man, it's a valuable piece to our puzzle in my estate, my kids, my family. You know, once you sell it, then, you know, you do something with that money, and then you kind of lose out on what ownership is all about. You know, I love when people call me and be like, yo, we want to put this song in this movie here. And it's like, you know, that's the reason you own a song or own your publishing, to be able to grant that and get that extra money. You know, it's part of the game.
You talked about family, you talked about estate. I wonder what it's like watching your son establish himself as an actor in this field.
Amazing.
I mean, who else could play you in the movie but your son? And he killed that. So what is that like? Because most people we see in music, their children want to do music. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Yours followed you in acting. How's that been?
It's been great. You know, I couldn't have, like, you know, written out a better script, you know, for it to happen the way it did. And the fact that he's not only, you know, taking that role, but he's run with his career. You know, he's in Spain right now doing Den of Thieves 2. Mm. And, you know, as a father, you just want your kids to be good kids, and then you want them to do something cool that they dig. And I think he's loving life right now. You know, he loving life. So proud of him, man. And proud of all my kids. You know, all my kids are great people. And that's you know, that's what you want at the end of the day. You know, as long as I ain't raising no jailbirds and no dope heads, you know what I'm saying? I'm happy.
How long have you been married?
Been married for, right now it's about 31 years, going on 31 years.
How has that impacted your career? I'm sure, we have people don't really talk about that a lot, but how that family, having the stability in your family, how important was that for you to be able to achieve the levels of success that you've been able to achieve?
Wouldn't be able to do it without the family support and without being a family man. You know, I just think about all the time that that could have been wasted, that I ended up really staying focused because I didn't have those distractions that I seen some of my peers have. And so, you know, it's been an essential part of me being able to do so many things and do them at a high level. You know, if I was just running around, you know, probably wouldn't get most of that shit done.
Q, appreciate your time, brother.
Much love, much respect.
When will the Big Three be airing again? How can the people get information? Anything else you want to let the people know before?
Check us out, the Big Three. We're going to be back for season 6 starting June 25th on CBS. We're starting out in Chicago all summer long from June 25th to August 26th. Every weekend, either Saturday or Sunday, you can check out the Big Three on CBS.
Yes. And I heard you got a celebrity all-star game.
Yeah. Y'all ready to get down in it?
Well,
yeah. I'm going to just say, yeah.
DC.
Yeah.
Y'all ready?
When is it?
It's a week before the 26th. What is that?
We going to put it in the calendar now.
19th. Okay. August 19th.
Put it in the calendar now.
Put it in the calendar.
You know, yeah, man.
It's in the calendar?
Nawalo, NLE Chopper, you know,
he can really hoop.
They
NLE
ball.
Chopper stuff. I've seen him play before.
Yeah, they can ball. So we'd love to have y'all come down there and show you what, you know.
That's easy.
Show us what you got.
Now, I appreciate you, brother. Thank you. And thank you for, you know, being a shining light for us, you know, watching from Boys in the Hood, talking about gentrification 30 years ago, to not being afraid to be political, to, you know, doing the movies, to being an entrepreneur, to providing information game is something that I think a lot of people have gained a lot of insight from, mm-hmm. inspiration, motivation, and education. So that's something that is extremely important. So thank you for everything that you've done for the culture and the world.
Appreciate it, man. You know, much love. Just thanks for everybody for all the support. You know, you can't do this kind of stuff without the people you know, supporting and showing you that they appreciate it and they want more.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I've had so many people motivate me. So to be able to motivate, you know, anybody from what I'm doing, you know, is just a blessing that comes off of, you know, putting your head down and working hard, you know.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
Yay, yay.
Yay, yay.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, bag drop.
Bag drop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
Bag drop.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.